Now, meditation. All about learning how to, if you're old, learning how to relax and take a break. If you're young, learning how to gather all of your energies, your psychic powers inside, so you can do amazing things. It's very nice, got some kids here. This is absolutely true. There are some monks, I know, this is weird stuff. Do you want to hear some weird stuff? It's absolutely true, because I'm a monk, I don't lie. There was this one guy, he was an Indonesian. And that, I'll tell you about how to meditate afterwards, this is a bit interesting stuff. And when he was a young man, maybe about 40, 50 years ago, he went off into the jungles because he wanted to go there and develop his inner powers. So he went into the jungles and he meditated in the middle of nowhere. And as he was meditating in the middle of nowhere, it's a huge, no, very peaceful inside his mind, huge light came into his mind and he united with that light and he stayed there for a long time. Maybe 6 or 7 days later he came out. And when he came out of his meditation, the jungle had totally changed. He found out from the villagers afterwards there'd been a flood, a big rainstorm, and he'd been underwater, maybe about 2 meters underwater, for days. But because of his deep meditation, he was fine. He didn't need to breathe. And there he was, underwater, submerged, perfectly okay. And later on, when I met that monk, he told me that story that he was teaching a meditation group just like this, but this was in Bangkok. And one of my friends, I never saw this myself, but I saw this from someone I trust as much as Rachel or Doug. Ah, come on! She was totally honest, and she said during the meditation, even though she was supposed to be inside being peaceful, she knew that something weird was going on. Something strange. So she opened her eyes, and what she saw, absolutely true, but unbelievable. Out of this monk were coming laser beams from his eyes, going into another monk, another layperson who was meditating there. You really, just like you see in the movies, but this was no movie. This was real. The monk with the laser eyes. Is that cool? Would like to see laser eyes? I'm sorry, you have to go to Thailand for that one.
I'm waiting for a punchline.
That's not a punchline. This is not a joke. This was actually real. I thought it'd be nice and awesome to say some really weird stuff. Sorry?
You just scared the
Not scared them. They're like laser eye people. So really weird. So this meditation, if you want laser eyes, would you like some laser eyes? No. Oh, come on. You don't want superpowers.
Don't open your eyes.
Imagine just when you're at school, if the teacher doesn't give you good marks, laser him. They didn't give you a good eye. When you're playing footy, laser the opposition. That's amazing, just some of the stuff which you can get from meditation. You don't usually talk too much about the weird stuff, but every now and again, some strange stuff you see when you meditate. Woo.
Can we add a disclaimer? Please don't try at home in the bath.
No, good fun. Life is really boring these days. You don't have superpowers like they did in the old days. Okay, so you want boring meditation then. Okay, boring meditation now. So, how to meditate is actually learning to go inside, in your world inside, which is a very nice, peaceful place. And actually, many kids have told me that when they were very young, they could meditate really, really well. Many children said that they could actually go and see a beautiful light inside the mind, or just be very, very peaceful inside. And sometimes it's our teachers, hope there's no teachers here today, some of those have sort of spoiled it all by getting you to think. So how you do your meditation is, first of all, especially for those who are old, like me, aches and pains in the body, itches or pains or whatever, we learn how to relax our body first of all. So this is for the oldies, the relaxing of the body by being mindful of your body and also being kind to your body. Those two together called kindfulness. By what, which I mean that you are very observant when you watch your body, you close your eyes, feel your body. How is your body feeling right now? Do you need to move your legs? Do you need to scratch something? But please only scratch your own stuff. Don't scratch your person sitting next to you. Otherwise, I get in big trouble. You do too as well. If you need to cough, cough. So in other words, you try and relax your body as much as possible. And you'll find if your parents learn how to relax more, they're much kinder to you. Sometimes it's just so tense and stressed. So we learn how to relax our body. Very simple to do. You watch the body, you observe it, and you learn from the feedback which mindfulness gives you how to relax stuff. So you can feel it. You can make your body really tense now. Make your body really tense and tight. How do you do that? You can feel it more tense. Now let go and relax. You can see that with that letting go, opening up, taking off the pressure, stop pulling and pushing stuff, then your whole body relaxes. So that same thing you just did there on a gross level, you can do on a very refined level. You can look at any part of your body, which is, may have an itch, an ache, or a pain in it. You look at it, it may be aching the legs, aching the tummy. You can look at it, observe it, with your mind, be totally aware of it, and learn what makes it worse, what makes it better. And even just attitudes of mind, just like thinking kindness, thinking expansion, thinking let go, imagining like a rubber band being pulled on both ends, and you imagine just letting go. And that means that everything just eases off. It doesn't have any stress, any squashing. Everything is allowed to expand and be nice and loose. And what you do, you can focus on any part of the body, which is, now I've got an irritating on the throat now. Watch the irritation of the throat and just watch it. What makes it worse? What makes it better? And little by little, you learn how to just relax it, relax it, relax it, relax it, relax it, until the irritation just mostly goes. And you can use that on anything. This lady in Poland some months ago, one of the great successes of this year, she had arthritis, chronic arthritis, severe chronic arthritis. And she overcame her chronic arthritis just through this little method of meditation. She wrote this wonderful email saying all those terrible, terrible medicines which she had to take just to get through the day, she didn't need to take anymore. Simply by becoming aware of the pain, what makes it worse, what makes it better, and little by little, learning how for her mind, but you relax and relax, relax, relax your body. A very simple thing, which is a first superpower you can learn here today, how to relax your body and heal it and make it sort of very, very strong. Simply you're aware of the body and know how to let it go. So we start with that simply because we need to develop a little bit of awareness now of something inside of our body, of our feelings, and also develop some ability to let go, to relax, not to hold things tight anymore. And once we've done that on our body, then we go to the next level, which is on our mind. And in our mind, for the last few months, I've been introducing being aware of the peaceometer. Just like in your car, you have a speedometer, you have another all sorts of other things on the dashboard which says, you know, how hot your engine is and how much fuel you got left. But just like in your mind, you got what I call the peaceometer. To understand what I mean, now you can ask yourself, how peaceful are you or how agitated are you? Give it a number from 1 to 10. 1 means really peaceful, 10 means very agitated. Give yourself a number. Now, once you're giving yourself a number between 1 to 10, 10 means really agitated, 1 means really peaceful. How can you move that number down from, say, from a 6 to a 5, from a 5 to a 4? What makes you more irritated? What makes you less irritated? And if you actually watch that, you are becoming aware of what I call the peaceometer. And that's a marvelous thing to be mindful of, aware of, because it gets to the very heart of what meditation's all about, learning how to be peaceful and avoid being agitated. And soon, once you keep watching that little peaceometer, just like a speedometer, you soon figure out, you push your foot down and the speedometer goes up. You lessen the pressure, speedometer goes down. It gives you feedback so you can adjust the speed of your car so you don't get caught by the speed camera. We saw a speed camera, it was supposed to be a speed camera, but we saw a couple of kids on the way here taking away the signs. I don't know what they were up to, but I couldn't see the speed camera either. I think they got that one as well. So some poor fellow's lost his speed camera for this weekend over in Byford. Anyway, but the real speed cameras, yeah, I mean, the speedometer in your the speedometer in your car, it tells you, gives you some feedback so you don't go too fast. Your speedometer, the peaceometer in your head. How peaceful are you? What makes you more peaceful? What makes you less peaceful? And when you watch that with mindfulness, soon you find out the same things like letting go. Don't carry around the past with you. Don't worry about the future. Now is the place your future is being made. Now is the only time you can do anything about your future. And all the worries about the future, it never happens anyway. That is my saying, never do today what you can put off until tomorrow, because you might die tonight. It's going to happen one day. But that's quite negative thinking. My positive thinking was from the cartoon, the Peanuts cartoon. You know Peanuts cartoons? Snoopy and Charlie Brown. Snoopy, Charlie Brown, they're on holiday somewhere. And Charlie Brown sort of says to his dog Snoopy, you know, Snoopy, one day we all have to die. Can't argue with that, can you? Or can you? One day we'll all have to die. And Snoopy, the very wise dog, you always find that dogs are much wiser than human beings. Dogs don't have to get up early in the morning and go to work on a Monday. They manage to figure it out so they don't have to go to work at all. You know, dogs don't have to go to school, do they? You guys have to. So the dogs have really got it made. So anyway, the dog is much wiser and said, yes, Charlie, it is true that one day we all have to die. But most days, we don't die. And that's the positive thinking. Most days you won't die. So, just be positive. You've got more days when you don't die than days when you do die. So that's positive thinking. But anyway, I don't worry about a thing. Whatever happens, happens. Every time I made plans, sort of, it didn't really make any difference. You don't make plans and things go wrong. You do make plans, they go wrong anyway. So why worry? Enjoy it before it goes wrong. That's my motto. So little by little, we learn how to let go of worrying about the future. We let go of the past. It's just like an old rerun of an old movie, which they used to have at Christmas. They still have the old movies at Christmas. Again, again, again. Just that's your memory. Just old stuff goes on and on and on and on. So we can let it all go and be free, which means that we don't have such a burden of worries. And anyway, people are really weird. When they do remember the past, they always remember the bad stuff. All the mistakes which happened. All the times you were tricked and cheated. All the times that people said bad things about you. Why do you remember that? My saying is, if somebody calls you a dog, you should look at your bottom. You know why? See if you've got a tail. If you haven't got a tail, you're not a dog. So end of problem. say to your friend, you're wrong, I'm not a dog, I've got no tail. But also what happens is people say, there's actually a story about that I wrote in my first book, about this, this is a long time ago, when there was US soldiers in Thailand, and there was one US soldier, he was an Afro-American soldier, and he was going from the base into town in one of these cycle rickshaw taxis. And halfway on the journey, that some of the driver's friends were getting drunk, and they saw this their friend taking this big African soldier into town, and they
people walking past.
Ooh, someone else. Yeah, it does. There we go. Amazing. But anyway, invite them in. We've got some spare seats.
Yeah. And trying to get out.
Yeah. Who knows? I said there's some weird things happen. Maybe I'll get my laser eyes out and laser them. Should I do that? Anyway, this guy, he was going to town, and this driver's friends, because they were half drunk, they started shouting out, "Hey, where are you taking that dirty dog to?" Because he was like a black man. And that's really rude, that's racist. And then the driver looked to his passenger, and the passenger was so peaceful, so calm, he thought he cannot understand the Thai language. So in Thai he said, "Look how dirty this dog is. Take him into town to throw him in the river for a good wash. Ha ha ha." And all the time, the soldier didn't even move. He was just peacefully watching the scenery. And when they got into town, the soldier got out of the taxi without paying. And the driver said, "Sir, you've got to pay me. What about my fare?" And the soldier said, "You and your friends call me a dog. Dogs don't have money. Goodbye." So if someone calls you a dog, remember, dogs don't have money, so you don't have to pay. So that's how he got off. So anyway, at least don't worry about what happened in the past. It's all gone. Take a break from that. Which means you can have a rest and not waste all of your mental energy. Instead, gather your energy up in the present moment. It's like focusing it, building up all your power in just this moment, just now. Not allowing any of it to go off into the past, where you lose your power. Not allowing anything to go off into the future, where you also lose your power. Focusing it just in one point in the now. So that means you get some energy and some power. And if you can do that, then you find that makes you very peaceful. You get, instead of all of the agitation, always comes when you're worrying about the future, which hasn't happened yet. You can't do anything about it. Worrying about it doesn't change anything. Worrying about the past, it's all done and dusted. You can't change it. It's a waste of time. So you preserve your energy. And quite frankly, most people are just so tired because they waste their energy. They just don't know how to use their brains. We think when we don't need to. And when we do need to, we've got no energy left to think clearly. Keep making mistakes. So here we're using our brain really efficiently. So we just focus it in this moment, look at the piezometer, and then we find out how that piezometer can actually be moved very calm and peaceful, but with lots and lots of energy. It's one of the reasons, again, why people get angry and upset and grumpy a lot of time is because they're too tired. So when we learn how to meditate, it's resting not just our body but our mind as well, so we're not thinking too much. Of course, most people complain they think too much. Kids are great. Your teacher says you don't think at all. Stay like that. Don't believe your teachers. You're having a wonderful time. The old ones, we think too much. So somehow between your age and when you get to our age, sometimes you don't think much as a kid, but you think too much when you're an adult. There must be that age where you just think just the right amount. I wonder when that is. can't remember myself, maybe 12 or 13, maybe 11, 10. Anyhow, see if you can go back to that stage where you don't need to think too much. And to be able to do that is to calm the mind down, is we look at that piezometer, and once that piezometer gets very, very calm, then you find your thoughts don't really have much power over you. They're not strong anymore. If you try and stop the thoughts by your willpower, it will just drive you crazy. You'll never be able to do it. If you try and just force the thoughts out of your mind, they'll come even more. But if you look at that piezometer, just calm your mind down first of all. Learn how to calm the mind down. Then you'll find that it's very easy to really, really relax very deeply. And that's actually how we calm the mind down. And then later on, hi, very good. And then afterwards, yee, you see they did find a way in. did you go over the wall or what? Outside?
No.
Okay, coming that way and this way, no way.
Yeah, they found a gate unlocked.
Yee, excellent. So anyway, when you learn how to watch that piezometer and calm the whole mind down, calm it down, then you find that you don't tend to think so much. And then the next part of the meditation we usually do is focusing on our breathing, just to actually to get some real power up, to be aware of your breath. So in order to do that, a little exercise, everyone. So even if you've done this before, just don't have to change, it's only 1 minute. Close your eyes and breathe in and out 3 times. At the end of the third breath, open your eyes, okay? Breathe in and out 3 times. At the end of the third breath, open your eyes. So hopefully you could all do that. Now we ask the question, how did you know you were breathing in or that you were breathing out? What feeling, what sensation, what told you that the breath was going in or going out? And that's what we watch at that particular stage of the meditation. After we've calmed our mind down by watching the piezometer and letting go, then we can actually focus on this feeling of the breath, which tells us our breath is going in or going out. And it gives us something to focus on. And as we're focusing on it, usually ask people to, as you are focusing on your in-breath, imagine you're breathing in peace. Look, you can breathe in whatever you like. If you're very sick, you can actually breathe in health. If you're very tired, breathe in energy. But most of the time I like people to breathe in peace. So imagine what peace is, like it might be like a dove for you, just flowing into you with the in-breath. And it can be just some calm memory of mountains or lakes or places which for you are very peaceful. Imagine that as you're breathing in. So you can breathe in the essence of peace. And as you breathe out, let go. Whatever is in your life or in your body, some sickness, some problem, a terrible thing which happened today, that gets breathed out with the out-breath. So breathing in peace, breathe out, let go. And that means that you're really focusing by this stage, because you've done the piezometer, you're pretty calm, the thoughts aren't just a big problem anymore, and then you can focus on your breathing and get very, very still. And that relaxes your body, relaxes your mind, and gives you some energy and allows you to focus really, really well. And if you're doing playing footy, or if you're doing studies at school, that ability to focus is really, really important. So you've got some power with your mind. So that's basically the meditation for those of you who have been here for a long time, and also for a few kids as well, with a few whiz-bangs, laser eyes. Okay, so we can actually start now. Is there any questions before we begin? I'm going to be leading the meditation. Those who come in late, don't worry, because I'm going to be leading the meditation now. So I can give instructions all the way through. Okay? Okay, so here we go. I'll go down here. Very good. So now, I invite you to close your eyes. And with your eyes closed, sit comfortably. If it's on a chair, or I prefer the floor, some people prefer floor, some people prefer chairs. With your eyes closed, you can become more aware of your body. You're not distracted by its sights. So now feel your body and ask yourself, can I make my body more comfortable? You start with your legs. Can you move your legs to make them more at ease? If you do move your legs, then what's it like afterwards? You're aware, mindful of the feelings in your legs. The mindfulness gives you feedback and you find whether the new position is more comfortable than the last. That's called feedback. And the kindness makes you keep on moving until you find the best possible position. Really care for your body. And your bottom on the chair or on the cushions, make sure your bottom is comfortable too. You can move it if you need to, like I need to move mine to get it just right. This is mindfulness and kindness in action. And then you can check your back to stretch it if necessary, to loosen it if necessary. Just focusing on your back, is it comfortable now? And then your hands and your arms, where have you got your arms and hands now? Sometimes we like to ask people to put your hands in your lap with your right hand on top of your left hand, with the thumbs just touching. Right hand over the left hand, thumbs just touching. How does that feel? If it is comfortable, keep it there. If not, put your hand somewhere else. But the most important thing is your hands and arms are so comfortable you do not have to move them from now on. And now check your head on top of your neck. Does your head feel comfortable? Or do you need to move it to the left or to the right? Now see if you can notice any tension, any tightness around your eyes. See if you can scrunch up your eyes first. Scrunch them up and then let them go. And you can be aware of the relaxing of those muscles. See if you can relax them even more. So those muscles get really, really loose. So you're not holding onto anything, not pulling things, stretching them. You're letting everything become natural and loose and light and free. So this is how you start meditation to get your body into a good position. And next, see if you can focus on one part of your body. If you've got a tummy ache, focus on your tummy. If you've got a backache, focus on your back, or any feeling somewhere in your body, and zoom in on it. like on Google Earth. Really focus in. If you zoom in on Armidale, first of all Australia disappears, and then the rest of Western Australia disappears, then you just got Armidale. If you zoom in on Google Earth, this is what you do, you're zooming in to one part of your body. And once you get to be aware of that part of your body, see if you can change the attitude to letting it go, letting it be, being kind to it, embracing it, opening the door of your heart to that feeling. See if you can be aware of that part of your body opening up, releasing its tension, relaxing. Even if it only relaxes a little bit, it's a start. And you soon learn from this feedback how to take one small part of your body, inside usually, and relax it. It can be a bruise or a wound, and by observing it and learning how to let things be, you can ease away so much pain and discomfort. So focus on that irritating part of the body. Make that your meditation object and see if you can learn how to relax it. Please focus. Feel part of your body. Get to know that small part which often causes you irritations. Discover what makes the irritation worse. What relieves it. Relax that part of the body until the irritation is almost gone, until the pain is loosened so much. When that part of the body is relaxed, just see if you can be aware of your whole body, just as one unified organ, just one body. See how relaxed it feels.
When the body is relaxed, it feels quite pleasurable, which is why people go on holidays to places like Bali just to relax on the beach. So there's no tightness, no pressure anywhere you can find in your body. Everything is loose and free and healthy. See if you can find this peaceometer inside your mind. How peaceful are you? Or how agitated, restless, disturbed are you? Between the two extremes of very peaceful or very restless, give it a number. If you're close to being very restless, very bothered and concerned, give it a high number. If you're quite calm and peaceful, give it a low number. The peaceometer. And see if you can recognize that if you let things be, stop trying to control and interfere with your inner world. Just stand back and watch it and be kind. See if you can notice that your peaceometer goes down, down, down. It's like taking the foot off the accelerator. You take your controller off your mind. You let it be. Just being here, not worried about the future, not carrying the past. Being free. You don't try to calm down your mind. You let the mind calm down. Leave it alone. See if you can notice the peaceometer get more and more peaceful. Once your mind is peaceful enough, then you can start watching your breath. So just as I demonstrated earlier, to see if you can watch your breath go in and go out. Can you notice it go in? Can you know it as it goes out? And as your breath goes in, say to yourself, breathing in, peace. Breathe out, let go. Breathing in, peace. Breathe out, let go. peace without let go. There's no need to think about anything. Just know the breath. Feel it as fully as you can as it comes in. Feel it as it goes out. Breathing out, let go. Imagine yourself not controlling anything, taking your hands off any steering wheel, feet off any pedals, your hand off the mouse, not clicking anything. It's totally freewheeling in your meditation. Just breathing in peace, breathing out, let go. Like sitting by a beach, watching the waves come in and the waves go out. Waves come in up the shore and the sea go out again. Breath coming into your body, breathing in peace. Breath going back out again. Just like sitting by the beach. See if you can watch the breath come in and go out without any interruptions. As soon as one in-breath has happened, then you watch the out-breath. As soon as the out-breath, then you watch the in-breath with no interruptions, just watching breath go in and out, breathing in peace, breathing out, let go. watching your breath, breathing in peace, breathing out, let go. If you do have any thoughts, imagine your inner world like a big screen, like on a computer screen. And in the middle of that screen is your breathing. Breathing in peace, breathing out, let go. And on the edges, that's where your thoughts live, and other stuff. The center is always on the breath. If you keep the breath in the center, after a while, all the thoughts, the memories, the past, the future, falls off the screen. You've just got your breathing, peacefully breathing in, peacefully breathing out. Keep your breath in the center. How do you feel? How peaceful are you? Again, please keep those thoughts to the edge. Don't focus on them. Keep the focusing on the breath, going in, going out. Breathing in peace, breathe out, let go. It is getting close to the end of the meditation now. Just how do you feel? How peaceful, how relaxed are you? That peaceometer, where's that needle now? How peaceful are you? This is without judging good or bad. This is where we find out what works. This is where we learn how to become better meditators. By knowing what worked and what didn't over the last half an hour. I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times. And when the gong finishes sounding for the 3rd time, come out from your meditation. Unless you come out, smile, please. I've got to face you guys. Sometimes after people finish meditating, I'm very happy, but then I look at you guys and oh God. Thank you for smiling. Excellent. So now, there is an opportunity to answer some questions, give a talk, or tell some jokes. Which do you want?
All three.
All three? Wow, you're so demanding. Okay. The Christmas joke. Want a Christmas joke?
Yes.
Yeah.
If you haven't heard it already. Once upon a time, there was a head with no arms, with no legs, and no body. And the head, because it didn't have any legs, had to stay at home all day. I was really, really bored. And the head could sometimes look through the window and look at all the other kids play and ride bicycles and people go out. But this poor head had to stay at home all day. He didn't have any legs. So when it came to Christmas, the head wished, "Please, Santa, I've been a very good head. So please, may I have for Christmas my present, 2 arms, and maybe even 2 legs. And because he was a very, very good head, that on Christmas Day he found a big package, and in the package there were 2 arms, 2 legs, and even a body. So the head put on his new body, his new arms and new legs, and he felt wonderful. He was just like everybody else. And as soon as he put his new legs on, he ran outside. And because he'd never been outside before, he never had legs before, he ran across the road, got hit by a truck and killed. Oh yeah, terrible. And the moral of that story is you should always quit while you're ahead. Oh. You must have seen that one coming. You didn't see that one coming. Oh, right. To quit while you're ahead. am I living up to my reputation or living down to it? That's a Christmas joke.
Yes.
Okay, excellent. So anyway, what do you want me to talk about today, other than other more Christmas jokes? Yeah, nothing.
What is your phrase? Be kind, be
make peace, be kind, be gentle.
Yeah, that, because that's on the new website as of
today. Oh, okay, yeah. What about, when was the last time I it's a very wonderful story, told the story of the old monks don't lie.
Doesn't matter.
That's a very, very nice story. Because this, a long time ago, there was when monks, they would wander from place to place, and wherever they got to that night, they would just camp out. They were so free and so peaceful, with hardly any possessions, except for when we have our
the winter for the rainy season. When it gets to the winter time, the rainy season, it's so wet you have to stay in one place. So there was an old monk who was wandering from place to place, having hardly any possessions. He would have his little arm spoil. For those of you who came to Serpentine a few days ago, saw our monastery, you see we come out with our arms bowl, and you put food in the bowl, and that's how we live. So in those days, as long as you had your arms bowl, you can go to any Buddhist village, and they'd put food in your bowl, enough to eat for the day. So you didn't need to have any money, you didn't need to have any credit card. As long as you had your bowl, you'd get some food that day. So there was this monk, an old monk, was wandering, and he came to the house of a farmer. And the farmer was a very good Buddhist and said, "Please, Venerable, I want to give you some food." And so he filled enough food in the bowl to keep that monk alive for another day. And having given him the alms food, the farmer said, some lunch. The farmer said, "Venerable, it's soon to be the rain's retreat, when you have to stay in one place. Have you got a place to stay yet?" And he said, "No." And the farmer said, "Please, Venerable Monk, stay close to me. There is a nice field next to the river, and I can build you a very, very simple hut. It doesn't cost much to build a little hut for a monk. Some of you, did you go and see my cave when you're there on?" "You didn't. And I wasn't even there. It was empty, vacant." "Anyway, for those of you who've seen where I live, it's a simple cave. It's not that much. And in fact, when some monks from our tradition first went to England, almost 35 years ago now, the people were wondering, can we afford to look after monks? How much do they cost to look after?" And there was one fellow, he happened to be a professor of economics at Reading University and an advisor to the Bank of England. So he knew what he was talking about. He did the calculation, how much it costs to look after a Buddhist monk. And he worked out, he did the figures, and he came to the amazing discovery, it's much cheaper to look after a Buddhist monk or a Buddhist nun than it is to look after a dog. So it means that every home could have one. Forget about cats and dogs as pets. Have your own pet monk in the pet nun in the back. And there's many similarities. The dog lives in a little hut in the garden. Just now, monk's huts are slightly bigger. Dog eats out of a bowl. So do monks. You take the dog for a walk in the morning. You take the monk for a walk. And the dog is always kind and always wags its tail when it sees you, just like the monks if they had tails. So it's very cheap. So it doesn't cost that much. Even a poor farmer could easily look after a monk for the 3 month rain retreat. So he quickly built him a very simple hut, and there the monk would actually meditate there, and he'd come to the farmer's house every morning for some lunch, and in return he would teach the farmer and his wife some meditation. He would teach the children a few stories and a few jokes, and he'd also look after the dog. The dog loved him. So there, 3 months he stayed there and had a wonderful time. By the end of the 3 months, the old monk came up to the farmer and his wife and said, "It's time I was going to go. 3 months is over, I have to continue my wandering." And the farmer was so upset, he said, "No, monk, we all love you here, you're like part of the family, please stay." And even the wife said, "Oh, please stay." And the two kids started crying, they were going to miss their monk. And even the dog put his tail between his legs and started whining. Even the dog had fallen in love with this beautiful old monk and didn't want to go. But the old monk said, "I have to go." "But," said the old monk, "because my meditation has been very powerful, and I've got powers," said the monk, not laser eyes, but other powers. "And I have seen," said this monk, "very close by, closer than you think, there's a buried treasure." and you are so poor, I don't want you to have to work so hard. And I want even the dog to eat nice food instead of the scraps he has to live with. So I want you to find this treasure. But to find this treasure, you have to follow my advice perfectly. And even though the farmer and his wife were sad that their monk would go, they were also excited that the next day they would be rich. Because old monks don't lie. If the old monk said there was a treasure there, there had to be. So the old monk said, listen carefully. So they all listened carefully, even the dog listened carefully. And the old monk said, tomorrow morning, get up early, before sunrise. Stand in the doorway of your poor farmhouse. And as the sun rises, pick up your bow and arrow, which you use to scare birds away. Pick up that bow and arrow and point it in the direction of the rising sun. And when the sun rises above the horizon, then let the arrow fly. And where the arrow falls, there you will find the treasure. And that's true, said the old monk, because old monks don't lie. And then the old monk left. And even though they missed that old monk, the following morning they were all up early. Farmer, his wife, the kids, and the dog. And he couldn't wait as the sun rose so slowly. And just as the sun was rising, he stood at the doorway of his house. As it rose a bit further, he picked up the bow and arrow, pointed it in the direction of the rising sun. That was important advice. Pointed it in the direction of the rising sun. And just as the sun rose above the horizon, he let the arrow fly. And it went such a long way, he shot it such a far distance. And they all ran after it. The farmer, his wife, the two kids, and even the dog. And because it was old days, guess who had to dig the hole? The wife. Guys were really bad in those days, but we got something called the law of karma. If you get someone else to do all the hard work, there's always going to be some karmic response to that, some bad karma. So the wife, where the arrow fell, she dug and dug and dug. And what did she find, Doug? Nothing, only big trouble. There's nothing down there. But that land where the arrow fell, where they dug the hole, belonged to a lawyer. And the lawyer came and saw them and said, that is against the law, digging in other people's property. I am going to sue you. I am going to take you to court. I am going to take your farm and everything you own. And the wife said, not my fault. My husband told me to do this. Husband said, not my fault. The old monk said we'll find a treasure. And at that, old monk, the lawyer went silent. And then he said, did you say old monk? Yeah, old monk said we find a treasure. And the lawyer said, I'm a Buddhist and I know old monks don't lie. What did that old monk tell you? And when they told him the instructions, the lawyer said, oh, I know what your mistake. Look at you. You are so poor. You've got no muscles on you. I am a lawyer. I eat well. Like most lawyers do. I will do a deal with you. Tomorrow morning, I will shoot that arrow. And I'm sure we'll find a treasure. And we'll split up that treasure. 51% to me, 49% to you. And the lawyer wrote out a contract and made him sign it, because that's what lawyers do. And having signed the contract, the following morning, the lawyer was there. At the farmhouse, waiting for the sun to rise, together with the farmer, his wife, the two children, and the dog. Don't forget the dog. It's important. And as the sun was rising, the lawyer picked up the bow and arrow. As it rose further, he pointed a bow and arrow in the direction of the rising sun. As the sun rose above the horizon, he shot the arrow in the direction of the sun, and it went a long way because he was much stronger. And they all ran after it. The lawyer, the farmer, his wife, the two children, and the dog. And where that arrow landed, this time it was the husband's job. He had to dig the hole. You know, if you get your wife to do it today, you will have to do it tomorrow. That's just the law of the universe. And so he dug a hole, he dug and dug and dug, and what did he find, Doug?
Nothing.
Nothing, only more trouble. Because this time the arrow landed in a field belonging to a general in the army. And the general came past with his soldiers and said, "You are destroying my property. Soldiers, cut off all their heads, including the dog's head." Poor old dog. But the lawyer said, "It's not my fault. It's this stupid farmer. He said a monk told him we'd find a treasure here." Like that. The general said, "Did you say a monk?" He said, "Yeah. Because I'm a Buddhist too," said the general. Even though he cuts people's heads off. But what did the old monk say? And when the farmer told the instructions he'd heard from the old monk, the general said, "Oh, look. You're all so dumb, so stupid. Look, how does a farmer or a lawyer know how to shoot a bow and arrow? You have to be a trained military officer to be able to know archery," said the general. "Look," said the general, "tomorrow I will shoot that bow and arrow, and I'm sure we'll find a treasure, because old monks don't lie. And when we'll do, we'll split it up three ways." So the following morning, the general was there at the threshold of the house, at the doorway of the house, waiting for the sun to rise, together with the lawyer, the farmer, his wife, the two children,
and the dog.
And the dog, yes, it's really important. Remember the dog. And as the sun rose, he picked up the bow and arrow, did the general. As the sun rose further, he pointed it in the direction of the rising sun, and as it went above the horizon, he shot the arrow. This went a long way, because he was a professional archer. He was in the military. And they all ran after it. The lawyer was puffing away, running because he was fat. The farmer, his wife, the two kids and the dog all ran after it. Where it fell, this time it was the lawyer's job to dig the hole. And he dug and dug and dug. What did he find, Doug?
Nothing again.
Nothing again, only really big trouble this time. Because this time, that arrow landed in a field belonging to the king. Ooh, big trouble now. And that the king had all of the people arrested, including the dog. Had to bring them all in front of His Majesty the King, including the poor little dog. So there in front of the Majesty the King was the general, the lawyer, the farmer, his wife, the two children and the dog. And he said, "You all very stupid. What did you do that for?" The dog said, "Woof," because that's all the dog knows how to say. And it said, "General, of all people, you should know that if you destroy royal property, that is a capital offence. You will all have to be executed." And the general said, "It's not my fault, Your Majesty. I was told we'll find a big treasure here." "Who said that?" "The lawyer did." "The lawyer said the farmer did." "The farmer said the old monk said we'll find a treasure." And at that, the king said, "Did you say old monk?" "Yes, an old monk told us we'll find a treasure." And the king said, "Wow, I'm a Buddhist too. And old monks don't lie. What did he tell you?" And when the king heard the instruction, he couldn't find any fault with the instructions. So the king said, "This is really interesting. I can't find what you did wrong, so I'm going to put you all in jail, including the dog, and look after you until I can find that old monk and get to the bottom of this, what you did wrong." So they put them all in jail, and the dog had a nice little cell all to himself with nice food. And the king sent out to find out where this old monk was. Didn't take long to find him and brought him back to the palace. When he came back to the palace, the king brought everybody in front of him and said to the old monk in front of the general, the lawyer, the farmer, his wife, the two children and the dog, said, "You got all these people into big trouble, including this poor little doggy. Why?" And the old monk said, "Because, Your Majesty, they did not follow my instructions." "What do you mean?" said the king. "Your Majesty, may I invite you to come to that farmhouse tomorrow morning to follow the instructions. And, Your Majesty, I guarantee that you will find the treasure tomorrow morning. And it's such a huge treasure, I would ask you to split it up four ways. And even your share as a king, you'd be so happy with your share. And how much more this poor farmer and his family will never have to work again with their quarter share." And the king said, "Done." So the following morning, the king came to the farmhouse. If you're wondering how long this story goes on for, it's about to finish. Well, the following morning, the king was there at the farmhouse, together with the general, the lawyer, the farmer, his wife, the two children, and the dog. Yeah, waiting for the sun to rise. And the monk. So the king stood at the doorway to the house, and he turned around to the monk, and the monk said, "Correct, Your Majesty." And the Majesty smiled. And as the sun came up, he picked up the bow and arrow, and he turned to the monk, and the monk said, "Correct, Your Majesty." And as the sun rose further, he pointed a bow and arrow in the direction of the rising sun. He turned to the monk and said, "Monk said, yes, correct, Your Majesty, exactly." And then as the sun rose above the horizon, he was about to shoot the arrow, and the monk said, "Wrong, Your Majesty. I never said, shoot the arrow. I said, let the arrow fly." And the king thought for a while. He had the arrow between his thumb and forefinger, about to shoot him. And he was a very wise king. He understood straight away. He let the arrow go. Moved his forefinger and thumb away, and the arrow flew straight down between his feet. And there they dug a very small hole. And what did they find there, Doug? A huge treasure. Enough that when they split it four ways, the king was really happy, the lawyer could retire, and even the general could retire as well, and the farmer and his wife could build a huge little house, get a nice car, go to holidays every year in Bali, and even the dog would eat now only the best food out of a silver bowl, and his little kennel was air conditioned. And the moral of that story, the monk said, "Look, it's not just a treasure you find. If you let go of the arrow of wanting something more, the arrow of craving, let that fly. Where does it fall? Right where you are, with who you have. Right in Armadale, exactly where you're sitting. That's where you find the greatest treasure of all. Peace, contentment, happiness, love with the people you're living with right now. Let go of the arrow of wanting, and there you'll find the treasure in this present moment." That is so true. You know why it's true? I'm an old monk. An old monk don't lie. Thank you. The old monk story, and I love telling it.